Well, hey, everybody. This episode of the Press Run Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Developments, makers of Out of the Park Baseball 18, MLB Manager 2017, and Franchise Hockey Manager 3. I'd love to invite you to join us live every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on Twitch as Up First, our baseball community manager, TJ Lowerman, live streams Out of the Park Baseball 18 for an hour every night, and that is followed by our Franchise Hockey Manager team of Adam Burnett and Jeff Riddles streaming Franchise Hockey Manager 3 live at 10 p.m. Eastern. That's on twitch.tv/OOTP Developments, live every Wednesday night. But if you're not able to make it and join them on Wednesday nights, that's okay, because everything is archived to our YouTube page, youtube.com/OOTP Developments. TJ is always having a lot of fun with the community and continuing his stories, as are Adam and Jeff, as they go through various scenarios of different hockey teams and the hilarity that ensues as you try to take teams that maybe aren't exactly built for the Stanley Cup and take a run at them. And of course, TJ has been trying to get his Padres franchise out of the ground and up to the top of the National League West. These are ongoing things that we do every single week. So please join us live on twitch.tv/OOTB Developments, live every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern for Out of the Park Baseball and 10 p.m. Eastern for Franchise Hockey. And you can pick up Out of the Park Baseball 18 today on Steam or directly from our website at OOTPDevelopments.com, as well as Franchise Hockey Manager on Steam or from OOTP Developments. Check them out. They are on sale for the end of the year, and it's a really great time to check those out. And of course, you can pick up MLB Manager on the iOS store for Apple or the Android marketplace. Go check them out, and thanks, everybody. Enjoy the show.
Well, after a tumultuous, to say the least, last 7 years, it looks like EA Sports may be bringing their strongest effort to the table since NBA Live 10 with the upcoming NBA Live 18. There's only about a month now until release, but the publisher finally made official details like the release date and the cover athlete while rolling out an impressively structured demo and announcing a pre-order price discount that'll make the game just $40. In this episode of the Press Row Podcast, we're going to discuss first impressions of Live 18 based off that demo, whether it appears to be on track to reestablishing some credibility this year, and the prospects for it in the marketplace given all of these latest developments. We'll also be getting to Madden NFL 18 franchise mode news and a delay to one of the games we were most looking forward to coming out soon. But first, it's time to introduce who's with me, your host Brian Weedy, Pasta Padre, for this show. Rich Grisham, you're frequently here with us. Let us know what's going on lately with you.
Oh, what's going on, Brian? Always good to be here. Very excited, as always. It's happening. It's happening. It's the games are coming. Oh. The season is starting. The video game season for sports games and the real season for real sports. It's all happening. I love it. So, to celebrate, I haven't been playing any sports games. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Actually, it's actually not that far from the truth. But
you should be building up some stamina for the next. That's what I've tried to do for the next month and a half.
Right. So I have been dabbling in NBA Live demo, which we will talk about. Mm-hmm. I also have continued to do a lot of dabbling of games through either the Xbox Games Pass or the PlayStation Plus. And so one of those was Tales from the Borderlands. Did you ever play that?
I did not. I played, is that a spinoff of Borderlands then?
It is a Telltale game. So it takes place in the Borderlands universe, but I've never played a Borderlands game, and it's not obviously not a shooty thing. It's just a story, and like all the Telltale games, you sort of pick the different reactions your character has and things like that. It's been pretty good, but it hasn't grabbed me. Normally, the first episode of these kinds of games grabs me. I'm a big fan of the original Walking Dead Telltale episode. A series was really good.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of The Wolf Among Us. I enjoyed, even though it wasn't by Telltale, I liked Life is Strange, similar kind of game. But those games usually grab me early. And this hasn't grabbed me early. I'm certainly not going to turn it off, but I've heard it's really good. So that's another reason I'm kind of sticking with it. So But that's one I've been playing. And again, that was through PlayStation Plus, which is nice to grab. Anyone who's got it, get it for free. I also got myself a shiny new Nintendo 2DS XL, Mr. Weird Eye.
Another portable device, Rich.
That's right. And because my original 3DS XL was really getting beat up pretty badly, mm-hmm. and because they just happen to come out and they're cool and they're shiny and they're new, and I haven't bought a new handheld since that 3DS XL. So I picked it up and I reached into my own little personal vault of games that either I have bought or bought for my son or just bought, and pulled out Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon on the 2DS, which I've heard is a lot of fun, and I played it on the plane, traveled a lot this week, and it is a lot of fun. I've always been kind of partial to Luigi anyway. He's my guy. Whenever I'm playing Mario Kart, that's who I race as, you know, or whenever I'm playing any of the, the Nintendo mashup games, I always pick Luigi. And it's quite fun, and it looks great, and it's just nice to sometimes play those kinds of Nintendo games where there's a real game going on here. There's a lot to sort of explore and learn and figure out and puzzles and things like that, but it's also very Nintendo. So even though it's taking place in, a haunted mansion, the characters look great and the music is great and there's just all sorts of little nuance that makes it a lot of fun. So I've been, those are the two things I've been most recently playing.
All right, and we've also got regular panelist. He's now going by Mills Gaming TV all over the place, Twitter, Twitch, anywhere you can find him. How you doing, man? What have you been playing lately?
Well, I've still been playing a lot of the show. A lot of their missions and events lately have kept me involved. But I just got done playing the NHL 18 beta, which we talked about previously. Mm-hmm. And then I also picked up Lawbreakers, which is the newest hero shooter from Cliffy B. And I've been having a ball with it. It's not for everybody, I don't think. It has a lot of Overwatch in it. It has a lot of breakneck, like almost Call of Duty-ish kind of combat in it. There's a lot of zero gravity. A lot of the combat takes place in the air, but it's a constant action and not normally my type of shooter. I'm normally a Ghost Recon kind of shooter, but it's just completely grabbed me and I can do nothing more than just continuously open as many crates as I can possibly get my hands on, which are just skins. They don't do anything to the gameplay, but it makes your guys look cool and there's 8 heroes and it's very cool. Last but not least, I cannot forget about Dead by Daylight, which is kind of, if you guys have played the Friday the 13th game, Dead by Daylight is the same idea. It's one killer and 4 survivors, and it feels like it does what Friday the 13th does a little better in terms of the leveling up with the perks and everything. So I've really been loving that. Not too much sports wise yet, but as Rich said, that is about to change.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so let's get on to NBA Live, which I don't think we really need to recap the situation with the franchise much more than I did at the top of the show. We have talked about this extensively, Rich, over the last 7+ years.
There are hundreds of hours, dozens of hours of talk about that. Yeah. Yes.
So I won't do that. But I will say, most recently, this is what NBA Live is trying to recover from. NBA Live 17 was canceled. NBA Live 16 was outsold by something like 100-1 by NBA 2K. EA did do a good job with their mobile game, which they released last year, and they're still having a lot of success there. But with the sales and cultural phenomenon of 2K, it's definitely an imposing uphill battle for EA, even if they put out a good product. But that's where it has to start for them. So based on the demo, Millennium, do you get the feeling they're about to do just that?
I get the feeling that Live is maybe not on the cusp, but very close to putting out a very good product that will draw in a lot of people that don't like the competitors' controls. I think that it's easier to pick up and play I think that it will be liked for its responsiveness in the controls, something that Live has been kind of known for the entire, when they used to compete against each other, it was always Live is the control, NBA is kind of the realistic side of it. And I think that their online setup might be a little better than 2K as well.
You know, as far as what you touched on first there is, NBA Live, and it has been in the past, but especially now, it comes across as the more accessible game. And I think this, what we see out of the demo and some of the other news they've announced, it's going to appeal to a more casual crowd. And you said the ones who are, overwhelmed by the controls maybe in 2K. Well, I think it's all not only that, it's potentially the people who just don't buy basketball games very often or at all. I think that's what I see NBA Live going for here with features like the way the career mode is put together, the controls, as you mentioned, being easier, adding in presentation elements like First Take, the WNBA debuting, and a lower price. I think those are all things that that are a lot more accommodating to people who are either inexperienced with basketball games or frustrated by the difficulty of basketball games.
And the one thing that I will say with that is 2K has earned their spot at this point with the basketball community, both in the hardcore basketball community and I think in pop culture as well. 2K is talked about constantly within NBA crowds. Actual NBA players talk about playing 2K all the time. Mm-hmm. So I believe you're right with a very specific crowd that has purchased 2K before and is, like you said, frustrated with it. I don't know that Live gets to take over the casual crowd yet.
Oh, no, it won't happen immediately.
Yeah, I don't think Live's going to come anywhere close to 2K even this year. Like I said, I think what Live is trying to do is establish itself to say, hey, look, this is a basketball game. It works. It is, it's not bad. It's actually pretty good. There are no game-breaking glitches. Our servers work. I'm going to say that again. Our servers work if they work at release. That is going to be a huge – if they can have their servers work for online play and 2K can repeats what they've done in the past, that right there is going to bring people over in the first 2 weeks.
I will say, though, you have to consider how many people are playing, right? NBA Live 16's servers worked great. They introduced different online features, the team-up kind of mode there, and nobody was on the servers. So it really, if you got servers that run well, but nobody's playing on them, doesn't matter much. But once you get people on board, then yes, that's when it does matter. You got to get people playing the game and buying the game. And 2K has to face the reality that they have millions of people at a given time online. And then, they tried different events. They literally tried events where they tried to get as many people as possible on and just broke things. So it's just different circumstances, but you're right. If they can create a good experience when people are there, when people give them a chance, that's going to be important to them.
Agreed. Fully agreed. But like you said, I think the demo gives them a little bit of, if the demo comes across well with everybody, this is, as we're recording, this is the first day the demo has been available to everybody. I think if the demo does well, if there are any hitches in 2K's game, that's going to I use hurt as a very loose statement. I think that will take a very small portion of people that say, hey, this isn't working. I'm going to go over and try Live. And I also think there's going to be a large population that buys both games, especially with the sale.
Well, that'd be $100 combined unless you're buying 2K's $150 version of the game, or its $100 version of the game. You'd have to be a pretty dedicated basketball fan to do that. But there's probably people like that out there.
Hey everybody, we're going to take just a moment here and thank our sponsors of this episode, HelloFresh. HelloFresh is on a mission to save home cooking. because it's just too good to go away. They want to make cooking more fun, so they focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. They think of themselves as a farm-to-box company because they want everyone to have access to fresh ingredients that inspire great meals, but they don't stop there. They also call themselves a couch-to-kitchen company because the best way to kick those 5 p.m. excuses is by feeling unstoppable in the kitchen. But they do even more than that. They are proud to call themselves a fork-to-feel-good company, too, because when you cook and eat delicious and healthy meals, you're going to want to keep doing it again and again. If they could do the dishes for you, they would, but their number one priority is to get you cooking. So HelloFresh currently offers customers what they call a classic box, a veggie box, or a family box. And you can choose between 3 to 5 different meals designed for 2 or 4 people. And new recipes are created every week. Their recipes will make you feel unstoppable and your taste buds will thank you. In 6 easy to master steps, they get you chopping, zesting, and cooking like a natural because most of their recipes take just 30 minutes and require minimal equipment. And I can tell you from personal experience that it's true. I am by no means a cook. My wife is a fantastic cook, but she cooks all the time. And so every once in a while, it's nice for me to be able to step in. Of course, I grab my son, who's 10, make him help me too. And HelloFresh does a great job of giving you everything you need, giving you the instructions on how to do it. And as somebody who kind of feels like the kitchen is this foreign place, I'm never completely comfortable, but they do a great job of making me, putting me in a position to deliver really tasty dinners for my family. And it's really cool. They're constantly experimenting in the kitchen and let fresh, natural ingredients shine. They offer ever-changing menus, classic ingredients in a new light, and easy-to-follow recipes to help you avoid that food coma and feel good inside out. They are a meal kit delivery service that makes cooking so fun so you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. They source fresh ingredients measured to the exact quantity so there's no food waste. They employ 2 full-time registered dietitians on staff who review each recipe to ensure it's nutritionally balanced. They deliver food to your doorstep in a recyclable, insulated box for free. And right now they're offering light summer meals, and they've also introduced breakfast options. And here's the most important thing, really, other than the fact that it tastes good and it's easy to do, it's less than $10 a meal. So you get good food, you're able to enjoy the cooking experience, and it costs you 10 bucks a meal, which is fantastic. So here's what we at the Press Row Podcast ask you to do. Go to HelloFresh and use the unique promo code PressRow30. That gets you $30 off your first week of delivery. So go to HelloFresh.com and enter PressRow30 when you subscribe. That way, you're helping us at the Press Row Podcast keep doing what you're doing, and you're going to experience a great value on some terrific meals from HelloFresh. So thanks again, everybody. Remember, PressRow30 at HelloFresh.com gets you $30 off. Go there, check it out. Thanks, everybody, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Rich, you are probably falling in on the side of 2K is a little too complicated. It is a little heavy at times. Even for people who are fans of the game, it's heavy. What do you get, what's the feeling you have with this NBA Live demo?
Oh, I'll get to the demo in a second. I don't know if there is room for 2 NBA games in the North American market in today's market, right? Like in 2017, I don't know. But I also know that this market is not the same as it was a few years ago. Brian, if you remember last week, we're talking about marketing and how things are shifting dramatically. And oh, by the way, I don't know if you guys noticed, but what did EA unleash today? They unleashed a torrent of YouTubers all at the same time for Madden and Live. And today was just this massive push on live streaming and YouTubing Madden, which is exactly what I said last week that they might be doing. And it was interesting to see that happen. Similarly, in how you sell video games in 2017, things are changing. So I don't know if there's room for 2 $60 NBA games, but if you want NBA Live, there are a number of ways that you can get it for a discount. And it'll be very interesting to see if that works. And, for example, I'm going to get to play between however long I play the demo plus through EA Access. I'm going to get a swing at least 10 or 11 hours of this game, but just by being an EA Access member. So you don't want to say for free because you're paying for EA Access, but it's certainly a deep discount. Mm-hmm. So between the demo and that, I mean, I'm already going to play this game no matter what. But there
I'll be surprised if there aren't some people that do bite at that $40 after playing the demo, because the demo, well, from what I played so far, and I don't know if we want to get into this right now or a little later, it's good. Like it's good. I'm not going to shout from the rooftops that it's amazing, but I'm also not going to dismiss it out of hand. It's good. And if you've got a good demo and you've got a discounted price and you've got a popular brand in the NBA and you've got one of the, you know, top, well, if not the top video game publishing name in EA, the top two or three, you throw Activision into the mix or whatever. So if they can sort of get enough people to play the game in the various ways that they can get it at a discount from $60, yeah, I could see those numbers increasing. I would maybe even increasing materially, but they have so far to come in a numbers standpoint from consumers. You know, NBA 2K is and will be the king for at least a little while longer because they just have such an entrenched audience. Yeah. And yes, the controls in NBA are extremely difficult for many people, myself included. But it's still the king. And it's still, no matter what you think about the state of the game at this moment from NBA 2K, it is the 800-pound gorilla, and it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, you know, I think probably all of us would say the demo for NBA Live is good. But as you mentioned, Rich, can two basketball games coexist? In NBA Live's case, is good enough? You know, that it may not be good enough.
And that's where the business model comes in, because what is good enough? Is good enough break even? Is good enough losing? Or is good enough making money? Like, what is, and that's what we don't know, and we won't, you won't know, but is this, where are they in that? What defines a success? Do they need just a certain amount of units sold at a certain price? Do they want to just see the user count go up so that they can build on that and see what's working and what's not working and then accentuate what's working and then look to build the brand and be in the black 2 years from now, 3 years from now? That's the big key, and we don't know. But you got to believe that at some point soon, they're going to have to get some much bigger numbers. But things can happen kind of quickly. It's not impossible for a comeback to be made. We've seen trends in the past where games have gone up and gone down. So this, at least, this little bit of a taste that I've got, gives me some confidence that they may be able to, that whatever their definition of success is, this might help them get there.
So, Mills, you know, we're talking about kind of NBA Live hoping to establish itself as maybe a credible alternative. Do you think the game offers enough that's different than NBA 2K? Because a lot of people will simply default to NBA 2K either because they're fans, or it's all they hear about in the media, or it's all over their TVs, or it's what the athletes are talking about. Is there enough that they've done differently with the game, as whether it be gameplay or features, to make you take notice, or that you think others may take notice of?
I think it's going to get word of mouth. I don't know that they've done enough initially. The gameplay, I think, absolutely feels different than 2K in a good way. I think 2K has 2K's motion on the floor and their play calling and everything like that is unparalleled. There's nothing that comes close to that in sports gaming in general, not just in basketball. But as you've stated, it's tough to control at times.
I was going to say, do 90% of the people know how to do any of that stuff, or would they be able to do it even if they knew?
Right. Even so, if you play against a computer team, like one of the issues that I've always had with NHL is the teams don't play differently. One of the things we've had the problem with Madden over the years is that, you know, you play a team, yeah, they have different players, but they don't really play that differently. Like, their play calling doesn't reflect, you know, their actual play style. When you sit down with 2K, there are differences in the teams, and they are not just the players on the court. They are coaching styles, sub patterns, like very deep things that if you watch NBA basketball you see in 2K. Live handles better than 2K. The live demo handles better than 2K does for me. Mm. When I push a button or a stick or, you know, a combination of buttons, which live is done, there is some mastery involved in live too. It's not just all pick up and play. I was able to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it, which is something I cannot say that I've been able to do with 2K over the years. The other thing feature-wise that I think sets itself apart is, and I mentioned this earlier about 16, the way their online is set up, I think it's an easier setup for people to understand as opposed to going to my park and, you know, having, you know, twos, threes, five games, how to get into a pro-am game and all this stuff. It's very, their lobbies are a little easier. Their invitations are a little easier. And you can play against the computer, which, again, it's not a huge thing, not a huge popular mode, but they're going to have live events where you can play against not only community members. Rich talked about YouTubers. Like right now, up on live, there are two co-op versus the CPU events that you can use five users versus CPU. One of them is against Chris Smoove, who is a big-time YouTuber, and the other one's against LSK, who is another big-time YouTuber. So I like the fact that you don't necessarily have to play it online to get that five-on-five experience. Something that, again, I think is missing from many sports games. I'd love to be able to play NHL against the CPU as like even as a practice.
Mm-hmm.
I think would be very cool for ESHL. But yeah, I think that's a mode that some will overlook, but I think a lot of people will enjoy that don't like to get online or don't like the mountain to climb to play against other players online.
So what did you, Mills, what did you play most in the demo so far?
I've played against the CPU and Superstar because I wanted to test some things.
In just the regular NBA Finals matchup, you mean?
Yeah, the Golden State versus Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And I've played about five games of that back and forth because I actually downloaded it under a New Zealand account, which allowed me to get it a day early, thankfully.
Yeah.
So I played that, and then I played on stream a lot of five versus the computer, the two events that we were talking about earlier. Uh-huh. I've played one or two games of 5v5, but it wasn't with friends, so it turned into a lot of hero ball, people trying to dribble through five guys and not understanding that you're not just going to be able to do that. So, yes, it's been pretty much the live events and the versus CPU.
Rich, how about you? Where has your time gone in the demo so far?
Only what it'll let me play. I want to be playing 5-on-5, but I have to unlock the second chapter of The Rise, which, or I have to beat it. I mean, I played it once, but was on the losing end. Mm-hmm. So I have to, actually, no, now I don't have to. Now I can actually play what I want to play, which is the 5-on-5, because that's what I care about. So, but I have played the opening game at the Drew tournament, which was fun, but obviously when your first game, you're just combobulated. I didn't know what was going on. You know, I'm just pressing things and seeing what's happened. So it's not like I felt in control, but I was able to figure things out quickly. And then I played the first couple, two or three parts of The Rise, which is the single player mode where you're controlling only your own guy. And I chose to be a winger or a wing shooter. And so I'm trying to nail those threes. I was going to go shooting guard, but I'm always a shooting guard in every basketball game, single player mode. So I'm like, all right, let me at least play a three, but still heavy focus on shooting. And it's been fun. I mean, it's certainly it's an experience that is not, man, I don't even know how to say it. Like it's clearly not superb. There's all sorts of little things that you'll notice, like particularly when the ball is bouncing around the rim or something like that. Some of the rebounds are a little wonky. But I mean, it's pretty smooth. And I was not expecting that. I mean, it's been a while since I played live. Obviously they skipped last year, and I remember the last game sort of
the overall consensus we had, Brian, and remind me if I have this wrong, was pretty much it's okay.
Yeah, that's what we had.
That's where we landed, right?
Conclusion that it was decent. It was like what should have been released 2 years prior.
Right. It was okay.
But yeah, compared to what else was on the market, it made it understandable why no one bought it.
Right. So this is better than okay from what I have played. So, I mean, what have I played? 45 minutes, an hour? So it's not like... And obviously, the more you play with this game, the more things will start to stand out, both positive and negative.
But
like one little thing that I thought was positive was at one point I was playing defense and I went to go chase the guy that I was supposed to be guarding. And I went through the lane and I just got absolutely flattened by a big guy in the middle. And I couldn't remember something like that happening. That's only happened once. But like little things like that, I was like, oh, okay. So maybe those kind of things will start to stand out more, or maybe things will start to stand out more. Like after he made a shot, Kyrie Irving in his little, not close up or whatever, was jogging down the court with his eyes closed, looking like very strange and weird. So it's like, okay. So anyway, long story short is what I've played so far has been smooth and fun and entertaining, and I'm looking forward to playing more. But initial thoughts are positive.
Well, yeah, and that's important regardless of how much time you put into it. Is a lot of people will, if they do give it a chance, if you can't capture them within the first game or two of it, they're lost. They're not going to keep playing a game they don't have to play, they don't feel like they have to play. So it's important that you start off on the right foot. And I think they did a pretty good job with that. And it seems to be the case for a lot of people that they can.
I was surprised. Yeah. I was surprised, though, that they make it start at the Drew. I would have thought they would have want to show off the arena experience as opposed to that, because a lot of people, I'll bet you, don't even know what the Drew is.
That's probably part of the reason why they're doing it. I think they want to, again, differentiate from the competition, put more of an emphasis on the street ball side of things or the pro-am side of things. Which is why they're also hooking you into a career that you can carry over to the full game. So they want people to get to level 20, which is what you max out on, and think, man, I need to keep playing. I need to see where this goes next. And so that the hope is then those people then become, they go and actually buy the game next month. So I think that what they're trying to do with like you said, with that is give you some kind of different experience. Because if you just throw people into... Also, yeah, I think it's important to point out that 5-versus-5 experience of a basketball game is the more difficult of the two between playing a normal standard basketball video game versus playing as just one character on the court, where you have your own goals and you have your own assignments and you kind of have a sense of what you need to do, and you can be successful with that even if you aren't super knowledgeable about the sport or even if you haven't played the game excessively in recent years. So I think that was probably the idea. They start you off as one guy on the court. They start you off in a situation that the competition doesn't have, and then they hook you into the career, which will hopefully carry over to the full game. For me, I think it worked in the sense that the career I am finding interesting. I'm doing things like playing the crossover, which is a Seattle event. It's pretty neat seeing the authentic uniforms, seeing the authentic Seattle Pacific U court, and all the Seattle guys who are on the roster. That's pretty awesome. And so that got me. And then the first take stuff, which I had to do, which got incredible traction on Twitter and in articles that were written, that they actually went and, look, EA has an advantage in that they do have the ESPN license exclusively. They've had it for like a decade now. And it's they had extended that deal, I think, at least through like 2019. And so they get to use the ESPN announcers in NBA Live. They get to use the ESPN presentation, music, screen wipes. Jalen Rose, I don't know if he's still in this one, but he was in the last one. So they get to use ESPN personalities, and in this case, they incorporated ESPN's First Take, Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman. And it was funny to me because I tweeted out about that, and I think like probably 75% of people said, well, here's a reason to buy 2K. And then maybe 25% of the reason actually, or 25% of the respondents said, this is actually pretty damn cool. And so, look, if EA can capture 25% of the people with anything they put out on NBA Live, that's a success for them. So it got them some publicity. The WNBA announcement recently got them some publicity. Now you can actually pre-order the game, and we know it's cheaper. As far as the price discount goes, Rich, do you think that's enough, this $20? Because the hook to this discount thing is that it's only going to be for pre-orders. So the scary thing about that from a consumer standpoint is most people aren't prepared to put money down on an NBA Live when they've been burned in the past. But you do have the extensive demo. You do have, potentially, if you have an Xbox One, playing it for 10 hours on EA Access. So there's reason there. There's some maybe confidence they're instilling in consumers to actually pre-order, to feel like they can make that commitment to it. Is the $20 off, do you think that makes a big difference in the minds of people?
Man, pricing is such a amazing item to manage, and it means so many different things, right? Obviously, it means revenue, so that's at the top of everybody's minds, but it also means what you represent. And does your price represent a premium brand, or does it not represent a premium brand? And I'm not suggesting that you have to be premium to be good, but it means something. And the NBA is a premium brand, and NBA 2K is a premium brand. So electing to effectively cut your price by one third is a very, very, I mean, it takes a lot of guts to do something like that. Now, technically, right, it's a pre-order bonus. So
I want to say something about that, Rich, because there was a lot of people, over the years saying what EA should do is, to get people back on board, is drop the price, is pull an NFL 2K5, and make it $20 or something. But in the contract they have with the NBA and the licensing deals, you can't do that. You can't just make your game $20. You can't release it any day you want. They have a earliest release date set. So you can't, EA couldn't have come out and said the game's $15 and it releases on July 30th. They couldn't have done that because NBA wants to create even opportunity for their partners. But what I see here with this discount, I wouldn't be surprised, and I don't know this for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if EA is eating this $20 on every copy they sell. If they're actually... Essentially, it's a $60 game, but EA is subsidizing it and making it $40.
Oh, right, and that gets back to what I was talking about earlier, is what is their definition of success, right? Their definition of success could be completely different than sales figures and ultimate team revenue, or it could be completely tied to that, right? For all we know, they have continued to make it, they continue to follow the strategy of we're business partners with the NBA, we're making NBA games, whether they're mobile games, whether they're console games, we're going to continue doing this. We took a couple of years off to sort of rebuild some more, and we like where we are, and we got a three-year plan. And while, yes, we'd love to see sales be much better this year, even if they're not, we're confident in what we're doing, we're building. Or are they like, look, we threw everything we had at, we took a year off. This game has to sell. It has to break through. And if it doesn't sell at least 250,000 copies, then that's it. Like, they could be anywhere. They could be on either of those things or anywhere in between. We don't know. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes it extremely difficult. If you know that, then the rest becomes easy to figure out. So from the price perspective, it's, consumers love sales. And they love discounts. And video game fans love and expect discounts. So I don't know that it's the right thing or the wrong thing, but boy, if you're going to do it, this is a really good way to give it a shot. Because, again, asking people to pay for something that they can't yet play is going more out of favor. Kickstarter numbers are way, 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 way down from what they were just a few years ago in the video game space. And pre-ordering a game like NBA Live, which has been away for a couple of years, is a lot different than pre-ordering NBA 2K, which is cranked out game of the years, sports games of the year titles for 5 years in a row or even longer. So, boy, it's just there's so many factors that go into it. Ultimately, I think it's something that if they can do it, do it. The only thing that, well, not the only thing. One thing that it does is it definitely devalues, or not devalues, it definitely, in my opinion, lowers dramatically the number of people that will buy it after that discount is gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's a potential drawback as well. So I don't know, maybe they'll extend the discount for a week or two after release. I don't know. That becomes a harder story. Like if you've been $40 for effectively a month and now you're $60, yeah. Ouch. I don't know. So it's tough. But hey, consumers respond to sales. Although again, they typically respond to sales of a known quantity of something that they can buy. This is obviously not a known entity, they can't buy it yet.
Yeah.
I would be completely surprised if that game, if NBA Live, goes back to $60 at any point. It, with, like you said, being $40 on a pre-order, that is, you just don't go $40 to $60. And the $40 price point is a make good with the community to an extent. They're saying here, we want you to play the game. We want you to get your hands on the game. We gave you a demo more than a month before it comes out, and it's a demo that does not have a time limit on it. It's got a ratings cap, but you can reset your player very easily and continue to play it online if you want. The other part of that, too, is remember that a lot of people, Amazon Prime, Best Buy Gamers Club Unlocked, like, you're getting it for even less than $40. Like, Gamers Club Unlocked, I think it's like $32.
$32.
Do we know that? Mm-hmm. Really? So with Amazon Prime, I can get it for $30?
Prime hasn't put live that, well, no pun intended, the discount is not effective yet on their listings, but Best Buy is, it is reflected at Best Buy already. I mean, I suspect it will be on Amazon sooner rather than later, but... yeah.
What's funny is I'm not even, because of EA Access, I'm not even a target for that. Like, I'm definitely not going to spend $40 before I get it on EA Access. And so you take out immediately all of your EA Access guys.
Well, you could buy out of that mix. You could buy it for Xbox One through EA Access and get the 10% off the $40.
Right, but I'm not going to do that now because I don't know. Like, I didn't even play NBA 2K. Nearly as much last year as I did 2 years ago. I'm going to now make a commitment to NBA Live. There's no way that I'm personally going to do that. But again, as an EA Access guy, I know I'm going to get 10 hours of it, so I don't need to make that commitment. And NBA is getting at least a little bit of revenue from the plan when I download it because they'll know that it was downloaded.
So, Mills, what's the temperature of NBA Live 18 right now on Operation Sports? Where is the discussion going there? Is there a buzz behind the game? What's the sense you get as far as the community goes and how they're responding to everything that's been happening?
Pleasantly surprised. Cautious. I think they're very cautious considering that there's very little... versus CPU, which is one of the things they really want to see. They're curious as to franchise details, which we have none of yet.
Yeah, there's just as far as retailer descriptions, they do mention franchise, but it's very generic. Same with Ultimate Team, very generic descriptions. There may not be anything significant there, but if there is, there's time for them to announce that.
Right, but overall, they're very positive. There's a lot of media on this. I know we are in the social media phase, but even on Operation Sports, like I'm seeing a lot of created GIFs. I'm seeing a lot of videos of guys showing highlights.
there's some cool moments. I think I've definitely seen some cool moments that are potentially shareable. And then there's, you know, some iffy moments, but I think the cool ones outnumber certainly, I think, what we saw in a much greater time period with NBA Live 16.
Right. I think, matter of fact, two moments that I think that's one of the things Live does, and I'll talk about two moments that I saw just today. Live really creates those whoa moments, like the moments where you see and go, whoa, did that just happen?
Mm-hmm.
One of them I saw today from a Twitter user, OB Wright, who's a big time Live guy. He actually had Steph Curry foul LeBron James as LeBron James was going for a layup, and LeBron James pushed him back and put his hands up and look at him disgusted. It looked like they were actually going to get into it.
Mm.
And that is something you definitely look for in a newer title, because emotion is normally one of the last things you get because it's such an add-on.
Yeah.
The other thing I saw was I was playing the co-op against Nikola Jokic. And I was a center, and I used the LT and the up on the right stick, which is the contest shot mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of actually going, I was under the rim, and instead of actually going up for it, I actually kind of leaned over a little bit and flipped Jokic over my back, which is a completely dirty play, mind you, in the NBA.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, but the fact that that's there. And an actual, you know, and it worked because it was on street, so there's no fouls. The fact that was there just kind of blew me away. I've seen blocks out of nowhere. Draymond Green is the monster he should be. I really think that overall the demo is being seen positively, considering it's a very pointed demo. I think they were very smart with what they allowed into this demo. I think they're very smart in the fact they didn't allow ratings to go up over 78, because one of the things that we find out when EASHL, before they were class-based, remember, is that, you know, it could be really fun to play with a bunch of 75 to 80 overall guys, but once everybody's a 99, then what happens?
Yeah.
Like what happens to the game once, you know, ratings are past realistic levels? The same thing with 2K. 2K does the same thing. When you get to 99s in the park, you start to, or not the park, in the pro-am, you start to see crazy things that you probably wouldn't see in the actual NBA.
Well, is this something different, too, between the two titles? You can buy your way to a good character in NBA 2K. I didn't see, as far as, obviously they're not going to have microtransactions in a demo, but it didn't seem like you're going to be buying your ratings or your skills. Maybe those crates, which give you things like shoes and gear, but it didn't seem like you're going to be spending money to make your character good, which I think is another accessibility potential type advantage if they go that route.
I agree. I didn't see anywhere that there were microtransactions in the Rise or there are microtransactions in the online portion, which is connected to the Rise. I worry a little bit. Well, no, because you can actually upgrade your guy online, too. So you don't have to worry about playing through my career like you have to do in mm-hmm. 2K.
Yeah.
So that's a plus. Yeah, I didn't see anything for microtransactions. Like you said, it won't be in the demo. I would expect probably microtransactions in Ultimate Team. I don't think that's a surprise for anybody.
EA's done a good job with their, you know, isolating the microtransaction mentality to the Ultimate Teams. And hopefully that's the case here again, because I think it's asking enough already to get people to spend additional money once they have an NBA Live, given the you know, the track record. But I think you'd be going way out on a limb thinking people are going to spend microtransactions on a character in NBA Live.
Well, this is probably a conversation for another podcast, but there's a chance that microtransactions being missing from other modes, such as franchise, might be hurting those modes as well. Again, that's an opinion of mine, and that one that, you know, is probably a larger conversation than we're ready to have right now, but mm-hmm. You're right. EA has very, very done a very good job in specifying that their microtransactions are in Ultimate Team mode, whereas 2K and Sony with the show have allowed those. Like you said, we use them in Road to the Show all the time. You can use them as franchise budget in the show. you can easily buy GM levels, which actually have an effect on the GM mode with VC in 2K. So, again, another conversation, but we haven't seen any microtransactions so far in this in the Rise or on the online portion of the 5v5 Pro-Am in live. And I think I'd be surprised if there was the way it's built. Mm-hmm. Because you have to earn skill points. If you were to buy skill points, it doesn't look like there's enough there to buy. Like, I think it would be very quickly. You could level up way too quick that way.
Yeah, agreed. Rich, you have anything to add NBA Live-wise before we move on?
Other than I am glad that it continues to exist or that it exists again, and I am hopeful that it is a viable option. And look, if I get close to hitting my 10-hour cap on my EA Access version of Live, that's going to really mean something. And for a couple reasons, because time is limited for me, like it is for many people. So you have to be very choosy when you get that 30 or 45 minutes or hour. Will it be a treadmill game perhaps for me? That could be interesting, because I typically go with a particular game for 3 or 4 or 5 months on the treadmill. I could see that happening. But I'm just overall happy that this demo seems to indicate that it's not just talk that we're getting, that this is a franchise that EA is investing in and that they're proud of. It looks like they're walking the walk, and that's exciting.
Okay, so Mills did make mention there of franchise modes and the lack of microtransactions, and maybe that's part of the reason why they haven't gotten much attention in many sports franchises in recent years. So let's talk about one of those franchise modes, and that's for Madden NFL 18, which is now, we're only a matter of a few days before that goes out on EA Access, and people are able to dive into everything, including franchise mode. So EA put out a ton of info on what they've done for franchise mode this year, what's new, what's improved. So you've got things like Play Now Live, not necessarily a franchise feature, but gives you the ability to play along with the NFL season, and you can begin a franchise mode from certain points in the season, from any week in the season.
That's huge, and I know that's a direct copy from NBA 2K, so let's all just get that out of the way. But hey, if you're going to copy something great, and that's a great thing to copy. And it's actually, well, I say it like I know, I assume it's easier than NBA, because there are 82 games and a much longer season with a lot more variables versus being able to break it up into weeks. But that's great. And it certainly makes me more likely to play an offline franchise, because in October or November, if the Eagles are having a good year, I'll definitely be much more interested. Let me just pick it up from here. I like that. It's cool. It's a direct copy. It's a ripoff. But at least they ripped off something good, so kudos there.
Yeah, so I know that people are looking forward to that and the ability to start with the updated rosters or with rosters at a certain point in the past.
Or the standings, too. Standings. Like how many times, the NFL is a lot different after 8 weeks and 4 weeks and 10 weeks than anyone ever expects it to be.
Yeah.
Right. So even just the standings is fun. You'll see a lot of quick starts.
Yeah. The statistics that come along with it, all of that, very valuable to be able to utilize that.
What'll be interesting, I'm sorry to interrupt, Ryan, but what'll be interesting is, will you be able to say like in week 8, oh, let me go back to week 4 and start from week 4? Because, if there's like a devastating injury or something, you might want to, not take the latest version, but go back in time.
Yeah, hopefully they lock those things in, yeah.
What about one more thing? The commentary updates.
Yes.
That go into that. So the commentary updates will make their way into franchise mode for this specifically as well. So they could talk about things that happened. Like if you start a franchise in like week 13, you get all of those commentary updates for the first 12 weeks of the season. I think that could be cool too.
Yeah, absolutely. So commentary is one of the big things. They definitely worked on that, capitalizing more on game situations, but also the league-wide stories like you're inferring there. And then I was about to mention customizable draft boards. That seems to be the other kind of big feature. Now, one of the complaints I've seen, and I think it's justifiable to look at this way, is that besides those things, this giant list that EA put out reads kind of like patch notes. There is the tuning, which has been done to trades, free agency, progression, injuries. So it's just slight adjustments here and there. But altogether, I think there's a lot of good stuff here. It's not anything that's going to blow you away. I think Madden is getting a little behind on franchise mode, especially when you compare it to something like NBA 2K's. But you know, you can't discount that Madden has the best by far online franchise. There's really no comparison out there. So we have to continue to give credit for that and making sure that all these features they put in and anything they adjust works not only offline but online. The way they set that up has turned out to be pretty valuable. But I think people are also looking for... they're looking at what's been done with story mode. They're looking at all the attention that Ultimate Team gets. And maybe Rich, a little frustrated that their mode of choice is kind of being neglected at this point.
Well, I don't think it's being neglected. As a longtime online franchise player, I don't feel as if it's being neglected. I want more things out of it. But what I'm looking for out of franchise mode, I think, is pretty different than most people. I know, for example, our friend Cat Bailey has been complaining, and rightfully so for years, how the owner mode is boring and basically pointless, you know, with the whatever sort of legacy points and the money that you make doesn't really matter. Although it's the NFL. Does the money you make at the stadium really matter any with the billions of dollars in TV revenue you're getting? So who knows?
Well, it was just there was a point where it was broken because you would end right up with negative funds and you couldn't sign anybody. So yeah.
Right.
But beyond that, once they fix that.
So I don't feel neglected, but I play the Madden one way in our league, our online league. That's all I do. And so as long as that works and we're able to play our seasons and I'm able to have that work, right, and play my friends and then play the computer and see who makes the playoffs and all that stuff, like, I'm fine. But that's me. I don't want people to think that I'm somehow, like, not hoping or expecting that EA makes improvements to it. But it's also ridiculous of me to, like, pound my fist and make demands for something that I don't really need a whole lot more out of. What I personally would love, and what I'm curious to see, is the ability for me to set the direction of my team without having to micromanage it.
Yes, we know you don't like to do any off-season tasks.
Well, not in football. In baseball, it's much more fun. In football, it's just much – I don't like it there. I want to build my team around offensive line and the cornerbacks. That's where
boring,
I want to focus.
That is boring.
So I would love to set my direction, and maybe some of the automation that they're talking about allows me to do that more. I don't know. Mm. But I know that runs the opposite of what most of the people who play Madden, they want to get in and micromanage everything. So I get where they're coming from, but I'm just not going to pretend like I'm outraged that franchise mode isn't getting a massive upgrade. And by the way, that's what it would have to be. Would be some sort of significant either new type of franchise mode altogether or some sort of massive overhaul to change things that I don't know that what you would do. So I'm sure there's people have laundry lists, and you guys probably both do, of things that you want to see in franchise mode. But for me, it functions perfectly. My bigger problem with Madden is not the franchise mode, it's the fact that the game has gotten significantly more difficult for me in the last couple of 2 or 3 years. You have to really be a lot smarter about playing Madden than you ever used to have success. And that's my bigger challenge.
Mills, what's your thoughts on the direction they've gone with franchise mode here the last couple of years, and this year specifically?
It's falling behind. They've admitted to it, you know, to falling behind a little bit too, I think, to an extent. The big board being added as the big feature this year is it's tertiary. Adding a big board for or for drafting doesn't really do a whole lot unless you're going to miss the draft. So, I mean, that is what it is. I do like that they went back, and this is something you do every year, but they tuned regression and progression again. Swami put out a video on it regarding their very specific rules on different positions and everything. So I think that's really cool. I think that they've gone back and they fixed a lot of issues. But like without adding stuff on, I can see why some people are upset. Because content-wise, I think the big difference between Ultimate Team and Franchise is that Ultimate Team content is – easy is the wrong word, but I'm going to use it – is easy to put out. It's all digital, you know, digital cards. Yeah. You know, it's all very much planned out, but you're just putting another card into the game. You have to make sure it's balanced, and you have to make sure that the economy works for it, but – other than that, you're just putting a digital card in the game. Franchise mode is going to require, as Rich said, there's going to require some significant change to either the coding or, you know, a big time idea to add in that doesn't break the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, I'm going to say it again. I think microtransactions not being a part of Franchise hurts it because there's no money to be made post-release off of it.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can't base everything in the game on making money afterwards, right? The franchise is a holdover that is still, you know, a lot of people
very popular. Yeah.
Their traditional way to play. It's why they buy the game. For a lot of people, now the segment of consumers who are playing other modes and spending money, very different, not necessarily the same people, right? You still need everyone to continue buying the game. And then you can try and make extra money off the one portion that does, which is still not the majority, but it's not like you could just scrap Franchise because it's not making money after release. But you obviously see where their priorities go now compared to where they were in the past.
Right. I've used this analogy before, though, is Ultimate Team is the college football team. Whereas franchise mode is the college baseball team. The college football team brings in 60,000 to 70,000 people every weekend. It brings in all of the money that supports pretty much every other piece. And while franchise gamers, myself included, because I am not an Ultimate Team guy in most games, especially not Madden, I'm a franchise gamer first. While you're putting your $60 down, unless you get on sale or whatever, but you put your $60 down, you're getting franchise mode. You're still a college baseball team where you're going to get upgrades, but they're going to come at a much slower pace than you will get Ultimate Team stuff. And that's unfortunately the realization of, again, the college football team brings in the money. They bring in the names. They bring in the influencers at this point because, again, we'll bring up, Rachel said it, the influencers were a huge part of the video release this year. There aren't a ton of influencers that get a ton of views off of franchise mode. Swami, Mr. Hurricane, you know, I base my stream on franchise mode, but there's not a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the big time YouTubers from Madden and the big time Twitch users on Madden are doing Ultimate Team. So it is disconcerting the lack of updates that franchise mode has gotten. I do believe that the gameplay updates that were in the game will change, especially the coaching adjustments, will change the way you look at franchise mode in terms of team building.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still not a franchise upgrade. So depending on who you talk to.
Yeah, so what would you say based on what you've seen on social media and Operation Sports, what has the reaction been to the franchise mode news, which kind of came late in the game here?
It's pretty much everyone has said there's literally no franchise upgrades, with the exception of the big board. Granted, OS is probably one of the places, and again, running the forum side of that, like I can say this, they overreact a lot when it comes to news for hardcore franchise modes. But in this case, they're not wrong. They overreacted. I think it's a little too far what they've gone with, but outside of the big board, what really is there? Like I said, progression, regression fixes, and a few fixes, but there's no real upgrades to the mode itself.
So, all right, we've got a few more minutes. So I just want to talk about one other topic, and that's Super Mega Baseball 2, which we may have discussed on a show months ago. Actually, what I know we did. I think it was in May. They announced that the game would release in September. So our reaction was kind of, that's, you know, going to be the end of it. September is way too packed with games. You start at the end of August with Madden, and you go through the end of September with FIFA, and there's like 10 games, many of them big league-licensed games, and then you've got others that squeeze in there also. And the reason why we were so concerned about it is because we loved the first game. We loved Super Mega Baseball, which released in 2014. That's a game that people seem to really like. It's a game that ended up on Sports Game of the Year lists. It's a game that didn't sell a whole lot because it released in December. So September obviously put it within the Major League Baseball season, but put it up against a lot of competition, not even just from sports games, but it would have just gotten swallowed alive, would not have been able to get any sort of publicity. So now they have announced that they've delayed it to 2018. They didn't specify when, but I think we can all assume it's going to be spring to coincide with baseball interest rebuilding right at that point with the new season. But, you know, it's interesting. I got a lot of responses on Twitter when the news came out, and there are a lot of people who are disappointed about it, but then there's also ones like us that recognize this is probably the best thing that could have happened for Super Mega Baseball. For it to succeed, if we want to see a future for it, if we want the development studio to be able to produce more games in the future. And so not only that, but they're going to be able to make the game better, and they're even talking about putting out a beta at some point, which they wouldn't have been able to do. Mills, what was your reaction to this news today when you first heard about it?
Same thing you just said. Super Mega Baseball is a phenomenal baseball game. It is underrated. It is a baseball purist's game built in a cartoon wrapper. It is especially when you get up on the higher ego levels, that game is phenomenal baseball-wise. I just cannot praise it enough. And in September, it's going to get buried under everything. We've talked many times about the sports gaming release schedule being all within a 30-day period and it being huge on consumers. That game, while it may get some of the diehards that play it, like I would have bought it day one, you can't put it in September. There's no, the only thing it has going for it baseball wise in real life is the postseason run, which at this point, let's be fair, is getting more and more buried under the NFL start of the season.
Sure. And the NBA starting earlier now.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's in a bad time for baseball in general. Putting it into the spring, possibly February, March, April, that area, even though the show comes out around the same time, I think that it would be a perfect move for them in the ability to purchase.
Even with the show, it's a very different type of game. It's a very different audience they're going for, and they can release on Xbox where the show isn't. So they still have a potential, even if it's just around there. They're unlicensed. They could release 3 weeks before the show, for all we know. They have the ability to do that, unlike licensed games, which, as I mentioned earlier in the show, they're restricted to certain things. So I think it has potential once you get there. And at least, look, competition much lighter in February and March. It'd be a lot easier for people to talk about it, a lot easier for people to buy it, because right now you have a list of games that are coming out that is, like, sports game-wise, if you're a sports fan, you're prioritizing from, like, 1 to 10, how many can I buy? and then maybe you're waiting for sales later. So, I mean, it gives it much more of a chance. Rich, what would you, what was your thoughts on the delay and its potential to hopefully do better at a different time?
Well, we're friends with, you know, Scott Drader and the Metalhead Software guys, right? Like, we've had him on the show multiple times. I met him in person a couple of times. These are good guys. And this had to be, I mean, I haven't spoken to him, of course, about this, though.
this had to be a wrenching decision for them.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's easy for us to sit here and say, and I'm one of the people who said it upon my initial reaction was, oh, this is a smart decision. You got to go to the spring for all the reasons you just said. But then I was thinking about it more. These guys, this is an indie studio. It's like two or three guys that have been working on
6 months without having money coming in.
Bingo.
Right.
You are talking about, they have had, you got to believe they've had this date for release targeted for quite some time and have based a dramatic number of operational decisions around that, knowing that you're going to get some revenue. I mean, who knows how much, but still releasing a game opens up a revenue stream that allows you to do things like pay your employees. And you know, if you're the one of the two or the three people that are in the company, pay your mortgage and buy groceries and things like that. So to make that kind of call had to be incredibly difficult because now, and they didn't say, by the way, it's going to the spring. It could be delayed by a month or 2 months or 3 months. So had to be very difficult. They make really good games. As Millennium said, Super Mega Baseball is and was a really fun game. So I feel badly from that perspective. I mean, most of the time when we talk about delays, we're talking about delays of big AAA games and studios. But from an indie perspective, this had to be really hard for them to do, and I'm sure is forcing some tough decisions. So I hope that all of those tough decisions work out well. I'm sure they made the delay to do exactly what they said, which is to make a better game. And I'm rooting for them. They're good guys. They're friends. And I'm a big fan and a big supporter of Super Mega Baseball. So I just hope that they do find the right window for the game that they want it to be, because that was clear that it wasn't the game that they wanted it to be. So I'm rooting for them.
All right, so I think that'll do it for this episode. Thank you, Rich Grisham. Thank you, Mills Gaming TV. Next week on the show, we're going to be able to talk about Madden NFL 18. We're going to be able to go through impressions. It'll be out on EA Access. I'll be able to go through my review. The review embargo will have lifted by the time we have our next episode. So I'm excited for that, and you know there's going to be probably other stuff to touch on as well, because it's never ending at this time of the year. There's news hitting pretty much every day, because we have so many games on the horizon. Thank you to both of you. Thank you to all the listeners out there, and we'll see you next week for the Press Row podcast. Take care till then.